The Tom Woods Show, episode 1820.
Prepare to set fire to the index card of allowable opinion. Your daily dose of liberty education starts here. The Tom Woods Show.
Hi, everybody. Tom Woods here. Mark Jeftovic is back with us today. Mark is co-founder and CEO of EasyDNS and the author of a book that I think a lot of folks are going to find helpful in this day and age called Unassailable: Protect Yourself from Deplatform Attacks, Cancel Culture, and Other Online Disasters. And as a matter of fact, since the first time I had Mark on the show, he has now made this book available for free. So there's going to be a link on the show notes page, tomwoods.com/1820, where you can get the book for free. He's giving it away at this point. And I think it's a book we could all benefit from. And I wanted to have him back on just because the kinds of trends we talked about not that long ago have really intensified since then. And I wanted to get his thoughts about where things stand and what we ought to do when it comes to deplatforming and having this or that service provider going after people because of their content. Let's talk that through. Mark, welcome back.
Hi, Tom. How are you today?
I'm doing great. And I am really glad to have you on again, because the subject matter of our last episode and of your book that I just introduced again to the folks is timelier now than it was then. Because let's say if we were to look over the past 5 years, people might say, yeah, okay, Alex Jones got in some trouble, or this other person got in some trouble. And now it's like purges left and right, people being dropped for no obvious reason. And the way these social media behemoths operate is they don't even bother to tell you why. They're not even going to bother to tell you, what did I even do? Like, what was the problem? Why are you angry? They will not even tell you. It was just simply wrong think. So we got to get back to this discussion. So there are a number of things we can talk about. We'll talk about what individuals can do, what your opinions are about social media and all that. But I want to start off with a really dumb guy question, because I'm telling you, there are people in the audience, and you all know who you are, who, like me, you know how to get to a website. You know how to even have your own website. You know how to post a blog post. You know how to do a lot of things. You can upload a video. But it's like, I know how to drive my car. I know every feature of that car. I have no idea how it works. As soon as the guy in the shop starts talking to me about what's going wrong with it, I just, my eyes glaze over and I think, I hope he's done talking soon and just gives me the bill so I can leave. I don't know how it works. I don't even want to know how it works. Well, likewise with the internet, people say, well, the problem with Parler was it didn't have its own server. Okay, you know what? I don't know what the hell that means. I'm just going to tell you, I don't even know what these words mean. So can you just walk us through the dumb guy version of what we need to know about the basic concepts involved here before we get into it?
I'll try, sure. And what we're talking about, how a lot of this technology is so complex that we're happy to just offload it to someone who makes it simple for us, has sort of painted us into the corner of where we are today. And you've probably heard the buzzword cloud computing. Everything's in the cloud. My service, my phone service is in the cloud. My web host is in the cloud. My blog is in the cloud. And cloud really just means, it's a joke among techies, somebody else's computer. So when you're hosting your material or your content or your platform in the cloud, the key point there is you're hosting it on somebody else's computer. But to your point, not everybody knows how to program this stuff. Not everybody knows how to run their own server. Not everybody wants to run their own server. So you have this double-edged sword where the internet has facilitated this amazing point of leverage where anybody can find a voice and anybody can put material out and anybody can just express themselves and build an audience and build a business. And they have all of this really high-end technology at their fingertips. Stuff that would cost a multinational corporation hundreds of millions of dollars to build in the 70s, you can get it for about $19 a month on PayPal. And you've got the same technology at your fingertips. But with that simplicity and with that leverage and with that ease, you get this dependency that you're dependent on this cloud now. So you're at the behest of the people that operate these platforms and these infrastructures. And so what they say goes. And if you color outside of the lines, then you're going to get kneecapped because of it. And what's happening now, even since I wrote my book, I wrote it as a kind of dystopian extension of logic in the book, but I said, all right, you want to take somebody down because they're a racist or something. I think I used the word irredeemable miscreant as just a generic catch-all to just, let's just label a person that society finds objectionable with that term. Well, these people, irredeemable miscreants, IMs for short, well, they may use a mail server, so the mail server will ban them. They may use a web host, so the web host will ban them. Well, where does it stop? They use the telephone, so is the phone company going to stop them? They have to eat, so is the grocery store going to ban them? They drive cars. Are you going to not let them fill up their car with gas? Where does it end? And it was a bit of a riff in the book that I thought, well, this is kind of heavy-handed. But over the ensuing months, and I guess a year or so since I wrote that, you see people, senators being hounded out of restaurants. I don't want you to eat here. People being thrown out of hotel rooms. We don't want you to stay here because your hat makes us feel unsafe. It really is getting to that ridiculous caricature of extremist extension of these sort of precepts that if you disagree with my politics, you shouldn't even have the right to breathe the same air as me on this planet. You should just be completely removed from society, excised like a cancer. That's where we're going with this. And so to sort of bring it back to the technology thing, Parler should have run their own computers. Okay, well, Parler's trying to get onto a alternative providers because sometimes you can't just buy a bunch of servers and stick them in a data center because now maybe no data center is going to take Parler. Or if a data center takes Parler, that data center's upstreams are going to say, you can't have that customer. We were having a conversation about this on a security list I'm on. Where does it stop? Where is the demarcation point? If I run a data center, can I tell you, let's say Tom Woods leases a few racks from me in a data center and you're sticking servers in it from all these libertarian nutcases, can I then turn around to you and say, well, I don't want you to take on Dave Smith. I don't want you to take on Michael Malice. You can have this other server and you can have this other server, but these other people are off the line. And then my upstream bandwidth provider is giving me the same rules. This is all crazy. The only rational way that we can approach this is to police what's going on our immediate platform. But to bring it back down to what people are saying, Parler should have their own servers. That might have been true a year ago when I wrote the book, but it's getting to the level now where, as I was trying to describe, everybody on the internet has an upstream. You're all connected to somebody up the stream from you. And what's happening now is this cancel culture and this deplatforming mindset is propagating all the way up and down the streams. So even Visa will turn around and say to Stripe, which is one of the biggest payment processors on the internet, you can't process payments for this person over here anymore. And suddenly you're being cut off at the knees from every direction. It's really gotten very out of hand lately. I'm very worried by all of this.
All right, let's now look at all the different layers that are involved here. You were getting at that just now, but what I'm thinking about is, okay, in an extreme case, there are people who have had, as you say, all kinds of services taken from them. I've seen people have their email autoresponder services taken away, so they can download their mailing list, but they just can't send any emails to it using that service. I mean, all these different sorts of services. So I'm trying to think, well, okay, we can find sympathetic people who might be willing to host you on their email autoresponder service, or I might be able to find a web hosting company that's very iconoclastic, or not even iconoclastic, just doesn't care. They're just, let's say, content agnostic. They don't care what you're doing on your website. It's not their job to care. They're in the business of providing hosting services in the same way that people who build houses don't generally ask, well, what are you planning to do inside this house? What books are you planning to read in here? I'm not sure I'm going to get. They just build the house, and likewise hosting companies. But okay, even if I get hosting, then as you're implying, well, that's not the end of the discussion because there are a number of other layers going all the way down to my payment processor, which would be the most difficult thing to do without. So how many of these different layers that I need in order really to be up and running online can practically be substituted by people who don't care that I'm off the 3x5 card of allowable opinion, you know, who don't care that I'm a dissident voice? And how many are we basically just at the mercy of the Borg for?
Well, I mean, this is not a great answer. But when we talked about this the last time I was on, I think I was a bit more upbeat and chipper about it. And I said, well, it's easy, Tom. You get your own domain name because you control your domain name and you can host all of your resources at least under your own domain name. So even if you're using a mail provider to send your email, if you use it under your own domain name and that email provider cuts you off, as long as you have a backup of your data, you can just move it to another mail provider and away you go. And on this note, I will just say there's fitting in with this strategy, and I did mention it in the book. We actually moved to this in the last year ourselves as we set up our own mail system on an open source software kit called Mautic, M-A-U-T-I-C, which is like an AWeber or a MailChimp, and you put it on your own server under your own domain. And one thing I'll mention about this, our open rates doubled. We were using a system called Klaviyo, and we left because they shut down our account automatically for sending an email that contained the word Bitcoin. So it was automatic. Our spend with them was over $1,000 a month. And it's like, nope, you can't say the word Bitcoin in an email. We've suspended your account. Have a nice day. Now, they reopened it. We got back up and running long enough to just get the hell out of there. But you can still control a lot of this yourself. You still have that optionality as long as you're running everything under your own domain name. But it's like the wolves are circling. People are getting thrown off. Like, registrars are being pressured to take down domains. I noticed that AR15.com, which is really a discussion forum about guns, as far as I know. I wasn't really familiar with it, but they got thrown off of their registrar, I think, 2 weeks ago. It's the circle is getting smaller. And we at Easy DNS, we took on a Tesla whistleblower a few months ago, and the conversation was amazing. He said, I've been thrown off by my web host. So he had his own domain and he was on a web host, and then the web host took it down. And I went out on Twitter and I looked, and these people are just tweeting at the web host to say, this person is evil and should be deplatformed. And the host just tweets back, yeah, okay, we've seen it. Thanks. He's down now. And it just completely blew my mind, because what's happening is, even if you're trying to mind your own business, you get your own domain name, you're building your own mail server over here that's under your own domain name, you've got your web host set up on your domain name, you're trying to just mind your own business and talk to your own audience, there's people out there who are not your customer and who are not the customers of any of your vendors, and they're going to hector them and badger them and threaten them and dox them until they feel enough pressure to take you down. So the tactics that I talk about in the book are still there, but you're getting pressured on all sides now.
Well, let's say you had some kind of magic wand here. So forget about the difficulties involved. Let's talk about that separately. But it looks like we have to start thinking about really building a parallel everything a lot sooner than I thought we would. I thought this was probably inevitable, but I didn't realize it was going to happen in a 2 week period, but we have to build our own everything that we can't be thrown off of. And even if we build our own everything, the problem will be there will always be provocateurs who will go and, let's say, go on some platform and constantly be calling for violence and whatever. And then, well, inevitably you probably should get that guy off. Completely crazy people. I wouldn't want somebody like that on my platform. But then it's just a matter of, okay, so then they'll try just being really obnoxious, and then it's just unbelievable. But let's say you had a magic wand and we could create our own parallel universe. What exactly would that involve? What would we need to build of our own that would allow people to post what they want to post, even sell things if they want to sell things, and be able to do that successfully? What are all the layers? And of those layers, how many do we have now that basically more or less are generally not taken away from people? Any?
There's a problem with doing it this way. And there's a point I wanted to bring out from one of your previous shows with Michael Rechtenwald. So I'm just going to remind you of that, because I want to come back to that point. But what you're talking about now, there's things like BitTorrent and there's things like IPFS and cryptocurrencies, which are, BitTorrent is a bit of, you know, technology from the past because it's been around for a long time, but these new decentralized cryptocurrency based or crypto blockchain based technologies are still, I suppose, considered the way of the future. And when we talked about this sort of thing last time I was on, I can't remember if we talked about payment providers specifically, but it was, oh, well, you just have to start taking Bitcoin and you're not going to take enough Bitcoin or other cryptos in to run your entire business. But over time, this will build up over time and eventually it will take a place among the financial instruments. And like you, I thought we were talking about a 10-year runway. But what's happened in the last 2020, call it, or even, well, you know, in the last amount of time, all of these trends have accelerated really quickly. Like, I can't believe how fast this has all accelerated. So perhaps the silver lining in all that is that out of necessity, someday this technology will take more of a mainstream position. That's been accelerated as well. And I will say on an optimistic note that despite the fact that cancel culture has intensified in the last, call it, year, and then more specifically in the last few weeks, there is a, I think, growing discontent among the silent majority of people who just want to live their lives and live and let live, who are not really thrilled about speaking their minds about this, lest their entire careers be destroyed, but behind the scenes, they're speaking up privately about this. And I think that's part of the solution or part of the response. I don't know if it's a solution that's happening out of this, is you don't need to reinvent the parallel internet, because there's a bit of a problem with that, which I'll talk to in a sec. But there's this existing protocols within the internet are becoming stronger. So I think more of this stuff, it almost looks like it's going underground though. It's going, instead of people having conversations and connecting with other like-minded people on Facebook, they're kind of going into the background and doing it on private message and even back to email and Telegram and Signal and Keybase and things like that. So also coming back to that point I said about the Michael Rechtenwald interview you did just a few days ago, I listened to it. He said, it's important that we hold our ground. We shouldn't have to build a parallel internet because people are badgering us off of the real internet. A lot of the people who built the internet and who operate the internet, they just want to be able to have an open and transparent internet for everybody. They want everyone to have a voice. They may not be too vocal about it right now because saying you want everyone to have a voice will get you labeled as a hate monger. But these people are still there. They're still in the background. They're still running networks. They still have agency in all this. And I think maybe it's more of a hope, but okay, I hope that there's going to be this quiet subterranean response, call it a backlash, if you will, of people saying, look, enough is enough. Okay. And what I always say about big tech and abusing their position in all this is that they are incentivizing their own disruption. So they forget how fast they disrupted the incumbents before them, and they don't realize that the pace of technology is increasing, so that as they take more of a heavy hand towards what is becoming obviously more biased and asymmetrical, I think maybe we'll all be pleasantly surprised at how fast things evolve to just disrupt the disruptors. And so, like I said, IPFS, Ethereum name service, decentralized domains, decentralized DNS, decentralized web hosting. It's all in the early innings now, and it's all starting to happen. So maybe it's not a parallel system, it's the successor system.
Okay, now after describing that, give me on a scale of 1 to 10, how confident are you of this ultimately working out and everybody, in effect, having a voice once again?
That's a tough question.
Or you don't have to quantify it if you don't want to, but just talk it through.
Other days it's a 10. I think this is, I do a podcast with a couple of friends called Axis of Easy, and it's part of the Easy DNS thing. And what we talk about a lot, a recurring theme, is protocols versus platforms, right? That's one of the defining struggles of our time. It's decentralization versus centralization. And so I think people are starting to realize that platforms are closed, proprietary, black boxes ruled by algos that you are at the mercy of. It's like China-style social credit in a box. Whereas protocols, that's an open source specification that is accepted by all participants, like email. You want to connect an email server to the net. It's known what protocols you have to follow. Different email hub providers have their own sets of standards. So there's nothing stopping you from connecting an email server to the net that does nothing but spew spam, but no one's going to accept your email. And so that's an example of an open source protocol, which is one of the oldest in existence, but it's still the most relevant way to communicate today. If you're building an audience and you're a content provider, the single best thing you can do is have the email address of all your audience. So,
well, by the way, everybody listening to that, I wonder, it's almost like there's a podcast host who's been urging people to do that, you know?
Yeah.
Build an email list to keep in contact. Well, I don't know. I can't remember the guy's name, but go ahead, Mark.
Yeah, I mean, some of them get it right. You're one of the ones who got it right, and my hat's off to you because, I mean, you even ended up having to move the Tom Woods elites off of Facebook. I mean, they're still there, but you're moving to MeWe, but at least you had the email addresses of everybody involved to coordinate that move.
And in case if there hadn't been a MeWe, I could have still written to those people. I could have still stayed in touch with them. Thankfully, there was a MeWe, and so far, we've enjoyed it. I've kept the original group up just for archive purposes on Facebook.
Yeah.
But it's set so that you can't post without my permission, and I'm not giving permission because every post you add, no matter how innocuous, could be a pretext for them to shut the group down. And I want it to be up for archive purposes. We have a lot of really great threads there.
Yeah.
And, you know, good information. I want people to be able to refer to it, but like, don't breathe. Don't touch it.
Right.
So what is your opinion then of these alternative social media platforms? In my episode with Dan McCarthy earlier this week, he raised a point that I don't know how I hadn't thought of, but we tend to think that the problem that these new up-and-coming, well, they've been around for a long time, but they're still trying to really reach critical mass, social media platforms, is not just that it's like a vicious cycle that there's nobody there, so nobody wants to join. Who wants to join a social network where there's nobody there? So because there's nobody there, there's nobody there. And it's very hard to get a whole bunch of people to get on there, become active, and stay that way. But he says that the other problem is, inevitably, the first bunch of people who join your new social media platform are the ones who got kicked off the old one. Now, some of the people who got kicked off the old one, it's true, it's absolutely unjust, and it's an outrage, and we can't believe it happened. But other people who get kicked off are just obnoxious jerks. There's no getting around that. And so you go on this new platform, and it's like Nazi insignia everywhere.
Yeah.
And so it repels normal people. So that's also a problem.
That's the one that I wanted to circle back on earlier on. And I think I sort of got off rambly and tangential, tangentially and rambly off on a side road, but it's like reverse network effect. If you create a social media platform whose stated purpose is free speech and uncensorable, not being censorable, you might as well just stick up a banner that says Nazis are us, because those are your first customers. And, you know, I mean that figuratively. And so exactly that point, which is why I think Michael Reckenwald was right when he said, we've got to hold our ground on the mainstream platforms. And I think when something comes along that does disrupt entrenched social media platform, it will do so on a different basis than free speech and freedom of expression. It will just be some other completely disruptive evolution that just makes the previous version look just outdated or tame by comparison. I always think of, I like the Mastodon protocol a lot because it acts a lot like Twitter, but it's a decentralized Fediverse that interoperates with Twitter. I mentioned this last time as well. So a lot of my tweets that you do see on Twitter, I'm not even on Twitter saying that. I'm saying that on my Mastodon node, and it just federates out across the Fediverse and it goes out into Twitter through a gateway. And I think that kind of a model where each Mastodon node is setting their own community standards for what will and will not be tolerated is an example of the kind of model that I think will gain traction in the future. Because people ultimately want some control over at least choosing the set of rules they have to abide by, not just by having them handed down to you from on high.
Well, true. Let me, just before I forget, let me say something I probably should have said before, thinking about different platforms and stuff for social media. In the old naive days, I'm sure if you go back 10 years, you can hear me on YouTube talking about the liberating effects of the internet, which are still true, even with the problems that we're dealing with. I mean, it's still a net step forward for mankind, without a doubt. But I was very naive about it, thinking that it was not going to be censored and this is the way it is and the powers that be are just going to have to deal with the fact that unapproved thoughts are out there. Okay, well, I look back on that now and okay, I guess I was wrong about that. But I'm thinking about what Rechtenwald said about what you should do with these new platforms, and you were hinting at this too, that it's perfectly fine and a good idea to go join MeWe and whatever other ones if you want to join Minds or whatever, but that you shouldn't necessarily shut down your Facebook account. You shouldn't shut down your Twitter account. Now, you can if you're just morally outraged and you want to make a point, but I don't think anybody at Twitter is going to notice that you're making the point. So I'm not sure of the value of that unless it just makes you feel better. To me, I'm generally not one for making demonstrations that have no practical effect. If I leave Twitter, has no practical effect, doesn't do it. The only person it hurts is me. It does not hurt anybody else. If
it's
I
like
leave Twitter,
blowing yourself up on a bus in an empty junkyard.
Yeah. So I agree with Rechtenwald that if you have a beachhead in enemy territory, why would you give that up? That's where you want to be. Is I would definitely stay there as long as I can. Maybe someday I get booted off, but in the meantime, I will have done what my primary goal is not to punish social media platforms. My primary goal is to reach people. It is not to punish Facebook or punish Twitter. That may be on my list. Maybe it's down there at number 8 or 9, but number 1 is to reach people. So as long as I can reach people, I'm going to do that. But this time I'm going to do it without the naivete of the past. I'm not going to do it thinking my whole reach is via Facebook and Twitter. And that's what it all depends on. And if that was taken away, I wouldn't know what to do. No. You have to go into it or stay in it with a plan B in mind. If this were ever taken away, what would I do? So if you're on YouTube, well, there's Odyssey with the weird spelling. There's Rumble. There's BitChute. Have 1 foot in those. And I need to be doing that too. I have some videos on BitChute, but I really do need to do that. Have a foot in these other places. Start building an audience over there. And of course, the key thing is, if you really are a content creator and you want people to follow you for your content, is build that email list. Because that's something they can take the service away, but you always have the list. And you can shop that around to other places that will do the service for you.
Right, because you have to think, all of these social media platforms are not your outlets, they're your antenna, they're your tentacles. So even the alternative ones and the mainstream ones, you're doing the same thing across all of them. You're bringing people back to your own website and you're getting their email address. That's what you do. But on the incumbent ones, you're right. You make them drag you off of there visibly. If you're not doing anything wrong, I'm not doing anything wrong. We're just expressing our opinions, which are perfectly valid opinions to have. Every time they kick somebody off, they have to drag them off the system rather than the person quitting in protest. That actually makes a statement, because the more that happens, the more the place looks like a Marxist re-education camp and people begin to realize I'm living in Watership Down here. Every once in a while, just somebody I know and was listening to just gets disappeared and you're not allowed to say his name anymore. And as that happens more often, people begin to realize there's something not really right here. And that's how you start to build up the critical mass, I think, of awareness.
Hey, everybody, let's take a minute to thank our sponsor, Policy Genius. It's a new year. You're full of good resolutions, and doggone it, one of those ought to be doing right by your loved ones. And Policy Genius is going to make that so easy for you. You can compare more than 30 top insurers at once and save over 50% in the process. Plus, there's no hassle because their licensed experts work for you, not the insurance company. So here's how it works. You head to policygenius.com. And right away, you'll be working out how much coverage you need, and you'll be comparing quotes from top insurers and finding the best price. The policies you'll be comparing start at as little as a dollar a day. I myself have been shocked at how inexpensive life insurance can actually be. And you might even be eligible to skip the in-person medical exam. Once you apply, Policy Genius takes care of everything for you. Their service team is absolutely excellent. And that's why they've earned a 5-star rating across over 1,600 reviews on Trustpilot and Google. Well, make 2021 the year you finally cross life insurance off your list and get protection for your loved ones. Go to policygenius.com and get started. You could save 50% or more by comparing quotes. Start the new year with one less thing to worry about. Policy Genius. When it comes to insurance, it's nice to get it right. Well, obviously, we want to take a minute to talk about your company, EasyDNS. I use the term DNS with my tech people, and they don't know that I have no idea what I'm talking about, but it does come up once in a while. They say, well, once the replication is done, that page should be up. And I go, yeah. Yeah, so again, treat us like we're seven, because some of us are the equivalent of seven, and all you tech people can just smile at this. But I want to know what you do, like what exactly it is, because you have told me in the past that if I know of somebody who gets deplatformed or has a trouble with a website, to call you and you'll see what you can do. Now, obviously, you're not going to automatically take on absolutely anybody. Nobody would do that, but that you'd at least like to take a look at it. So I'm curious, explain to me exactly, I'm sorry, I should know this stuff, but explain exactly what this company of yours does.
Well, at its basic form, we're a domain provider. So you have a lot of domain names. We register domain names. But we started out, even before you could register domain names with us, as a DNS company, as distinct from registering domain names. And what all that means is that before you can get to a website or send an email or have a chat conversation or anything like that, a bunch of computers around the world have to have a really quick conversation that maps the IP address of wherever you're trying to get to, a web page or an email server, to a human readable label, like a host name, like your email at tomwoods.com or your website at tomwoods.com. The computers don't know that. They just know these little addresses under the hood, like 192.168.5.50. You can't be expected to remember that. So all DNS does is map back and forth between the two. So we've been a DNS server since 1998. We started being a domain registrar sometime around 2000. And then since then, we actually do web hosting, email hosting, and we're turning up VPS hosting this year.
Okay. So let's talk about then situations where people, maybe they read your book, maybe they read Unassailable, or a friend of a friend said, hey, this buddy of mine just ran into some trouble. One of the various services discontinued it for him, and now he's adrift, and they come to you. I assume there are some people you say, well, I'm sorry, man, you're kind of on your own. What's that like?
Yeah, sometimes we have to say that. We had a pretty high-profile white nationalist site come to ask us if they could come on a couple years ago, and we said no. And we took a lot of heat for that because people said, you're supposed to be the free speech registrar, so you have to take these guys on. And we said, one of the things about free speech is you have the freedom to say no to a Nazi. So there's this whole balance of business risk versus reward. As a libertarian, I'm sure you understand every business gets to decide for themselves who gets to stay on and who doesn't. I mean, that's part of the intractable philosophical issue that we wrangle with on shows like this, because we are libertarians and we look at this and say, well, Twitter is a company, Google is a company, Facebook is a company. Can't they do whatever they want? And then we have all of those wider issues about the hugeness and the pseudo-monopoly of these companies. And, how do you balance these different issues out. But sometimes somebody comes to you that you don't want on your system and you don't take them on. I told the same thing. We were talking about the emerging cryptocurrency protocols that are coming out. And we work with the Ethereum Name Service Group, and I was at one of their work group meetings in England a couple years ago. And they're talking about, okay, uncancelable domain names. And I'm throwing up a flag saying, you know, at the end of the day, you don't really want something that is completely uncancelable. What you want is a rational governance structure to figure out what the moderation parameters are going to be. And that's kind of blasphemy in some circles, and maybe to some libertarians or anarcho-capitalists. They might just be absolutists. Anybody can say whatever they want anytime. Okay, fine. That doesn't mean I have to give you the soapbox to do it on my system.
What is your advice? What we talked about today is that maybe we have a lot of work ahead of us, but in the short run, whether it's deplatforming or what social media platforms are the best or what strategy we should follow or what to do if we get in trouble, what would you just tell people as a basic set of guidelines and advice?
Well, on the technical basis, get your own domain name and back up all your data. Like, start there and be reaching out to all of your users and having like your audience as a content creator and be getting their email addresses. You have to start there. If you're something else, if you're like a software as a service provider, you have to start creating redundancies all the way across your spectrum. You have to look at everything and say, okay, if this vendor cuts me off, what am I going to do next? What's my plan B for this? And maybe start having conversations with your key vendors to say, look, I want to firm up some of our terms of service here. What do you think is within your purview to force me on, and what's outside of your purview? Are you going to and start putting things? I was, when we were talking about Parler on one of the mailing lists I'm on, I was talking about some of these companies should actually, if they have a large enough IT spend for some of these companies, they should have the gravitas to say, we want specific riders added to our contract. Because a lot of these software as a service companies, a lot of these cloud providers, the terms of service are take it or leave it. You go create a YouTube account, you don't get to tell YouTube, I want these special considerations. But if you're a cloud provider and you're looking for upstream bandwidth or a data center or a emergency data center, and you're spending a decent amount of money every year, then you can go to those vendors and say, look, well, give us the standard contract and we want to start talking about riders around where you are and are not going to have the demarcation point between what you will and won't do, under what circumstances you will terminate our service and that sort of thing. So at least if it happens still, you'll have a legal recourse. I mean, Parler is suing Amazon, and I've seen Amazon's rebuttal in the court filing, and they're going back and forth and saying X, Y, Z. But at least if you can get some specifics in your contract around this to define it, then also at the very least, you get that upstream vendor thinking about it. Because sometimes I think a lot of these cancellations happen out of panic, pure panic. You have a vendor who's never faced anything before like this, and suddenly everybody on Twitter is yelling at them. And what these vendors may not know is that none of the people yelling at you on Twitter are your customers. None of them have ever spent a dime with you. And if they say they're going to boycott you, it's never going to make any difference to your financial bottom line anyway. But they
such an important insight right there.
Yeah,
exactly.
But they just see the din happening and they panic and they cancel the account. Oh, we canceled the account. Just make it go away. And, you know, A, never negotiate with terrorists. And B, now you've just assented to having your customer list dictated to you by an anonymous mob on Twitter.
Yeah. And in the long run, that is not where I want to be, because boy, that mob is fickle and relentless and never shuts up. And,
you know, but sometimes sometimes it's transient. Like if they see that you're not going to budge.
Yes, exactly. It's they never shut up when they feel like they can get somewhere with you. Then there's another demand. There's another demand.
Yeah.
But if it's just a pointless use of their time and energy, maybe they'll go on to a more vulnerable opponent, and then you can just live your life.
Yeah. I mean, when the I don't think I can say the name, but a Tesla whistleblower was on our system. And that was the one I mentioned earlier that they just shouted at his previous web host. And the web host is like, okay, thank you. We took him down. And then they started shouting at us. And they said, this person is doxing this other person and it's cruel and inhumane. And we just looked at it and we just put out one tweet. We said, we've investigated this incident. We've determined that all of the material being disseminated on the website has been compiled from previously publicly available material. There is nothing to see here. And that was it. And they shouted at us for about another 3 hours and then it was over.
Well, very interesting, but I can understand, even though I despise weak people, I can understand the feeling of panic. For example,
yes,
just given that I know what it's like to be attacked by a lot of people at once, or even by major newspapers, which has happened to me before, and that's pretty scary.
It is.
But at the same time, it never occurred to me, well, maybe I'll just back down now. That thought never entered my mind. But I can understand when you're in that moment of panic, you're not really in your right mind and you may make decisions you wouldn't have made otherwise. So I don't want to make excuses for these companies, but at least say that with a small company and somebody who's poured his whole life into something and then the crazy mob comes after him, well, at least I understand the mindset. I understand where his mind is when he's making that decision, but you got to just buck up your courage. I mean, I remember I had a time when within a matter of 2 weeks, I had had the New York Times, the Boston Globe, and maybe one other big, big outlet come after me. Bill Kristol's old magazine, I outlived that. That's all dead now, the Weekly Standard. And I just thought, well, I thought this is really unfortunate, but I got to be me. And then I realized, no, it's actually quite fortunate because it sold a huge number of books. Because people had to know who is this guy. It got me on the radar big time. I mean, it turned out that it was actually not so bad. Like in the same way, it's like there's a case of, I know of a bar where all the lefties wanted to shut it down because they did this or that wrong thing. And they just turned it around and they exploited that to appeal to just the normal people in the neighborhood. And it turned out to be a bonanza for them. So if you play it right, it can be okay.
Well, that's another huge, huge point that I do mention in the book, Chapter 4, does deplatforming even work? It doesn't. So the crowd, like the mob, they may succeed in destroying an individual career, and nobody wants that individual career to be their own. However, the overall idea will get stronger, and in many cases, like you said, you can actually catapult a career into the stratosphere through the deplatforming thing. And I cited a paper in that book. I can't remember the name. It was four professors wrote it that they said, if it's a brand that's not a ubiquitous brand, so if you're not McDonald's or Staples or Walmart, so you're like a brand that's not a household name, then boycotts are good for business. But you will get a net benefit from a boycott and a backlash than you will. It'll help sales at the end of the day. You're going to get free publicity that you can't buy if you wanted to, and you're going to get that much more brand recognition that it actually translated quantitatively to increased unit sales. So
let's tell people the website for your company.
So it's easydns.com. We can put a coupon code as well if that's kosher.
Yeah, I think it should be Woods. Can you
Woods.
Swing that?
Yeah.
That's Woods. The only code people are used to on this show.
Okay. Woods, 50% off initial order. And we also put out a tech digest every week under accessofeasy.com. So we do a podcast and some writings there. We aggregate people like Charles Hugh Smith and a few others. And my personal blog that I'm actually about to rebrand. So bombthrower.com is the domain to remember right now.
Oh, jeez, crying out loud. Nothing provocative about that.
No, I just thought, you know, I had that domain for a different project and I thought, you know, that's such a good domain. It's a crime to not be using it. So,
okay. All right. So I'll link to all these things at tomwoods.com/1820. And Mark, thanks so much for talking to us today.
Thanks for having me again, Tom.
All right, folks, that's it for another week of the show. I am planning another supporters event. This is an unadvertised bonus of being a member of the Supporting Listeners Program. I had a great event in October 2020 with a lot of good folks, many of whom were coming from states where they had not really been allowed to do much of anything, much less get to know new people or chit-chat with old friends. And Old Woods here had a big event, and we all had a wonderful time, and Eric July was there. So I'm doing another one, probably in May. But that's not the only reason to be part of the Supporting Listeners Program. It helps this show roll along, and you get so many benefits. I mean, I defy anybody to beat me in terms of benefits you get for supporting a show. You go check out supportinglisteners.com. You're almost going to burst out laughing when you see all the things you get for supporting the Tom Woods Show, not least of which is membership inside the Tom Woods Show Elite. That is our discussion group full of great, wonderful people. You're going to want to be part of that. If you enjoy this show, you belong in there. So check out supportinglisteners.com, and I'll see you next week.
Become a smarter libertarian in just 30 minutes a day. Visit tomwoods.com to subscribe to the show for free, and we'll see you next time.
Like the sound of the Tom Woods Show? My audio production is provided by Podsworth Media. Check them out at podsworth.com.